pranams to all blessed Atmans, blessed souls who, especially those who are treading this path, path of realization, path of Dharma, path of realizing that which the great masters before us have realized in their own lives. Blessings to you. May you be inspired, uplifted, and drawn into the very heights of realization. It is for this purpose alone that we gather, that we listen, that we are focused at this particular time. Jai Gurus. I want to speak to you from the desert where we are currently parked. And I had wondered, up until the very time that we started to broadcast, that whether God would let me speak or not. He's had me in a tremendously uplifted state. It is not the sabbakalpa samadhi that is spoken of, in which the body becomes fixed. I can move to a certain extent, but there are times when he has me wrapped in his presence, and even getting up to move from one part of the room to the other is an adventure. And every day I ask him to allow me to at least go for a short walk. And sometimes he doesn't relent until the end of the day. But I am his slave, his servant, his instrument. How he chooses to manifest through this form is completely up to him. Sometimes I have some stern talks with him, and I tell him I think that he should make me more outward in focus, more outgoing, that my service to aspirants and devotees, I should have more time. But that's not how he has seen it. I had a fairly active life until the year that death started to stalk me. And then the direction came that we should do a pilgrimage around North America. And God told me the nature of this work would change at that time. That my time would be spent more focused on publishing Mother's works, on being indrawn into him, and that others should rise up, his ministers, his servants, and that they should play a more prominent role. And so this is how I have been guided. And this is how things have gone. And it is a time for each and every one of us to really get to work, to put our minds upon God, to serve Him, to love Him, to chant His name, to make that connection. The ideal is not that we should spend more time with the Guru. The ideal is that the inner guru should be awakened, and that inner guru should be with us always. I remember when I was living in eastern Washington, and I would have to drive over 3 hours in order to see Mother. I was driving truck for my father at the time, and I would leave very early in the morning and watch the sunrise as I was driving, come up over the mountains, and as I was coming across the bridge going into Seattle across Lake Washington, I could feel as if it was Mother's spiritual aura, an aura of power. And I was actually entering into it. I felt this field that I was entering into, and it's definitely Mother's. And it was powerful and it was wonderful. And each time I would come and I would think, will it be the same? Will it occur at the same place? And each time it did. I never asked Mother about it, so I don't know what she thought about that. But that was my experience. And then when I was in Africa, I had gone to the Canary Islands and from there to Spanish Sahara. And I had bargained to get onto some trucks that were taking supplies on the Spanish side. And there was a battle that was going on between Spain and Morocco over some territorial dispute. And so these trucks took us right up, those of us who were in the truck, right up to the border. And at nighttime, we could hear the gunfire. And then the next day, bargained with the French-speaking Moroccans. And in order to get a truck ride up through the Sahara, and there is no road, they knew where they're going, thank goodness. And many times we would get stuck in the sand. And that was a whole adventure in itself. But we would get out, and then we would continue. And I remember I was at one of these times when the truck was stopped, and I was looking out over this vast desert. And suddenly, I smelled Mother's perfume. White lilac was the brand she used at one point. And I smelled it so clearly, and I felt her presence so strongly. And it was wonderful to know that she was with me even halfway across the world. And so your vision begins to broaden. At first, we feel the power of the Guru when we come into their presence, and we feel that upliftment, we feel that power. And then through our spiritual sadhana, we gradually come to experience that presence more and more in our lives. It's different than our own thoughts. It's different than our own intelligence. It's different than our own will. Sometimes, following this inner direction takes us in a very different direction than we ourselves would like to go or think that we should go. And when we follow it, and when we stay loyal to it, then it takes us through all the experiences that are required in order for us to be lifted up. On that same trip, when I was in Africa, I was also in London, England. And an incident happened there that I thought some mistake had been made on a ticket. And I went to the travel agent, and they had just closed their doors. It was 5:01, 5:02, and they had closed them at 5. They were still sitting in there. So I tapped on the glass door, and they looked at me and pointed to the clock. And they wouldn't let me in, and it turned out all right. But in that moment, for some reason, it just hit me, and tears started to come up, and I felt so alone and so abandoned. I just walked the streets in a daze. And suddenly, I felt this arm of light come over my shoulders, and it was so reassuring and so comforting. It was a strange experience, strange that I had had such a reaction to something so mundane, and it was not life-threatening or anything like that, and yet this eruption came forward, as if God Himself had abandoned me. And through that outpouring of tears, He comforted me, and He made me know that He was with me always. So you see, in this way, gradually, gradually, we come to that point where God becomes that presence that is with us, omnipresent, present everywhere. And that intelligence is always with us, guiding us, helping us. That omniscience is there. And we see His hand in so many things, and ultimately we see His hand behind all creation, within and without. And that is His omnipotence. So this is the way that he has guided my life, and it has not always gone the way that I thought it would. He has taken me on surprising twists and turns, and yet, as I look back on it, I see that it has been perfect every step of the way. Not that I have been perfect, I have not, but that he has been perfect. And when I have gone against his guidance, his direction, his will, or I have resisted it, then I have paid a price for that. And through the pain of paying the price, it has helped to purify the consciousness so that I don't see it as being subservient to his will against my own, because I know his interest is in my highest and best interest. Sometimes I may have a thought or a desire or a feeling for something different, but I know that when I follow him, that it is most perfect. It has never let me down. Reading today from the posting that I sent out around Sri Yukteswar's Maha Samadhi. It's entitled, Sri Yukteswar's Body Buried, His Spirit Never. It was on March 10th that Master and other disciples buried Sri Yukteswarji, having attained Maha Samadhi on March 9th. The delay of one day, in India, bodies are many times dealt with on the same day as their death, was due to Master steaming by locomotive from Calcutta to Puri. Sri Yukteswarji had cabled Master, that was a day or two before, to come right away, but Master had some things to finish and delayed coming. He was not there for his Guru's Maha Samadhi. This was something that Master had a very hard time forgiving himself for, and finally found resolution when Sri Yukteswarji resurrected himself to Master months later in the distant Bombay. And if you'll remember Master's description, he did not go into the detail of his not being there, but rather in Calcutta, that he could have been there. In fact, Sri Yukteswar had asked for him to be there. And for some reason, he did not respond right away. And so he was not there at the very moment when his guru left the body. And that bothered him greatly. That was very difficult on him. And it wasn't until the resurrection of Sri Yukteswar, some many months later, that he got resolution, because he felt very bad about this. He felt he had missed the boat. And this is the way that it can be. It's like a crucifixion that happens when we feel like that we have not obeyed the Guru implicitly and completely. In India, most corpses are publicly cremated as a rite of purification very soon following death. However, young children and swamis, considered already pure, are therefore either buried or swaddled in cloth and put into a holy river. Sri Yukteswarji's seaside hermitage in Puri, there is a peculiar picture on the wall of the Bhajan Hall. It was strange, and I stared at it, not quite comprehending. I suddenly realized that the great master was seated in meditation posture. Master and another disciple each had a hand on either side of his two shoulders holding him up. Sri Yukteswarji had already fled the body, no longer inhabited that form. But he was sitting in the midst of the devotees. The juxtaposition of this picture took a bit for my mind to understand. It was shocking by our Western standards, but a powerful picture. Master designed a samadhi temple to be constructed over the site where Sri Yukteswar's body was put to rest. Like traditions around the world, the bones of a saint are considered holy and to be revered. This has, interestingly, sometimes led to fights between disciples and communities as to where the remains would find a home. This spiritual materialism was sometimes driven by pride of ownership, Also, a community could become wealthy as a pilgrimage site. Despite these pedestrian motives that sometimes surround the body of a great saint, there is no doubt as to the uplifting power that comes from the remains of a realized master. I've experienced the power of the remnants of divine personalities, Lahari Mahashayas in Haridwar, masters at Forest Lawn, mothers in the Rose Garden up Floral Hills, Papa's bones in the Bhajan Hall, Anande Moy Mahs in Kankul, Meher Babas in Meherabad, Sai Babas in Shirdi, to name some, and of course, Sri Yukteswar in Puri. My first darshan of the Puri Samadhi Temple came in 1998, when on pilgrimage there was Swami Vishwananda, Larry, Kate, and Phyllis G. It was thrilling to enter the grounds, walk in that ashram, hallowed by both Sri Yukteswarji and Master. The doors of the Samadhi Temple were unlocked by the Swami, and we sat in meditation posture. Indeed, it was powerful, uplifting, even transforming. Swami Vishwananda was obviously moved more deeply than I observed in any other pilgrimage spot to which we went. We all felt its uplifting power. Since that darshan, I saw Sri Yukteswarji in a brand new light. Through Master's descriptions, Sri Yukteswar often came across as stern, uncompromising in principle, and critical. Of course, Master was in training under Sri Yukteswarji and being prepared for a very difficult and powerful mission in the West. Sri Yukteswarji played a grounding role in Master's life. Beforehand, I definitely had the feeling this great God-man, while possessing a tremendous sense of humor, would be difficult to be around. However, with my experience in his Samadhi temple, I came to know his unalloyed joy and sweetness of spirit. This came as a revelation and very unexpectedly. After our meditation, we walked the grounds of Karar Ashram, and then the doors of Master's bedroom were unlocked, and we were given an opportunity to have its darshan. Even though the room was not well kept, dusty, and stacks of newspaper on the floor, still the power of that room, with a simple wooden bed and a few items. But my, what a powerful vibration fills that room. We never wanted to leave. I reflected on my surprising discovery of Sri Yukteswarji's unbounded joy on the spot he was buried. My mind was directed to Master's description from the autobiography of a yogi, The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar. Quote, "I have now told you, Yogananda, the truths of my life, death, and resurrection. Grieve not for me. Rather, broadcast everywhere the story of my resurrection from the God-dreamed earth of men to another God-dreamed planet of astrally garbed souls. New hope will be infused into the hearts of misery-mad, death-fearing dreamers of the world. Yes, Master, how willingly I would share with others my joy at his resurrection. On earth, my standards were uncomfortably high, unsuited to the natures of most men. Often, I scolded you more than I should have. You passed my test. Your love shone through the clouds of reprimands." He added tenderly, "I have also come today to tell you, never again shall I wear the stern gaze of censure. I scold you no more. How much I had missed the chastisements of my great guru. Each one had been a guardian angel of protection. Oh, dearest Master, rebuke me a million times. Do scold me now. I shall chide you no more." His divine voice was grave, yet with an undercurrent of laughter. "You and I shall smile together so long as our two forms appear different in the Maya dream of God. Finally, we shall merge as one in the cosmic beloved. Our smile shall be his smile, our unified song of joy vibrating throughout eternity to be broadcast to God-tuned souls." Something in the expressional nature of Sri Yukteswarji changed after his passing. He said, "Never again shall I wear the stern gaze of censure. Our smile shall be his smile, our unified song of joy vibrating throughout eternity to be broadcast to God-tuned souls." I now had first-hand experience of his joy, unexpectedly, surprisingly, and wonderfully real. And since that experience at his Samadhi temple in Puri almost 20 years ago, Sri Yukteswarji now stands not only as a symbol and a reality of uncompromising clarity in regards to wisdom and truth, but as an effervescent bubbling up of pure and ever new joy. On this day of remembrance, may his light of wisdom and divine joy be broadcast to God-tuned souls everywhere. This is wonderful when we come into the realization of both God's wisdom and his joy. It's a great revelation that comes when we realize we can have direct perception of God. This is vastly different than it was taught in most churches today. In most places, it is all vicarious. The atonement is vicarious. The God experience is to be experienced vicariously. Sometimes, in some churches, spirit-filled churches oftentimes, there is an emphasis on having direct experience of the Christ, of his joy, of his power, of his healing touch, all of it. And yet, there is a missing step. That step whereby we become quiet, deeply quiet within ourselves. Be still and know that I am God. And in that quietness, in that stillness, and in that knowledge of God, God's mind merges into ours. We feel his thoughts. We feel his presence. We feel his joy. And it comes in a most wonderful kind of a way. And when we are comparing and contrasting, as we are lifted up into an experience and then we come back down into a human experience, it is painfully obvious that the human experience is the much lesser of the two, and completely different than the uplifted state. When we are uplifted in God, we feel as if it will never end, as if this is our natural state, and why would it be any wise differently? But until we have paid the entire price, the total price, for knowing God, for going through the mystical crucifixion, for having ourselves go through that transformation from the human to the divine, until we have done all of that, then we will always come back into what we think of as normal human consciousness, the limitations of the human ego, this little body, identification with the things of this earth. But as we go through those experiences, and God will take them through us, God will take us through them. He definitely will. When our hearts, when our minds, when our souls are totally given to him, when we want him more than the things of the world. And then we will be lifted up. The Guru will come to us. I've been having the great privilege of working on Mother's writings. They are transcripts of her talks that we have turned into writings. And the goal is to have these turned into books. And I'm making headway on that with help from wonderful souls. We're all working together. We have this virtual office. I love the concept of a virtual office. It is one in which we meet on computer. And we are able to send documents back and forth and do all the things that we need to do. And each one of us are in our separate homes, and it's resonant of the householder yogi, wherein you remain at your home. And that is where your spiritual practice primarily takes place. And that we do not need special cathedrals. The cathedral of our inner temple, the temple of consciousness, the temple of awareness, that is where God is to be found. It is true that when we go on pilgrimage, we can get wonderful benefit from the uplifting, powerful vibrations that go with a certain place that has been hallowed by God in nature or through man's uplifted consciousness that then embeds itself into a particular place. Churches, temples, synagogues, places in nature can all become temples of God. But mostly and primarily, God is to be found within you. God in the kingdom of heaven. This is a tremendous statement made by the Christ, made by Mother, and it is absolutely true. So the Guru comes not just to give us intellectual knowledge, but to lift us up in the vibration of their presence through the power of God-infused words, through a look that the Master might give us, through a touch in which he might transmit to us some of that spiritual power that helps to awaken us. One moment with the Guru can be worth many, many years of silent meditation because of that uplifting and transformational touch or look or thought or word that the Guru gives to us. It changes us on the cellular level. I remember sitting with Mother and feeling the power of God. That's the first thing that I really noticed being with Mother. It's the power that came through her words, through her presence. And each time I would come back, I would wonder, will it be the same? Will I feel the same? And each time I did. And it gradually began to sink into this thick skull that here was a manifestation of God. I was in the presence of God in the form of my Guru. Now some people could hear that and take exception. Oh, well, no man can be God. And that's true. But God can manifest as man. And this is also equally true. And God manifested as Mother. The Divine Mother came in her form, and we are all the beneficiaries. But she too was one time a seeker, an aspirant for truth, and she was brought to Master, not unwillingly, but not completely of her own desire either. She didn't know what a Swami was. She didn't know anything about yoga or meditation. It's a very different time. It was 1925. And yoga, meditation, and other concepts we take for granted were just not on the horizon for a vast majority of people. But I thought I would read to you a few of these writings that are forming together to be a book about Mother's experiences, and these are focused on being with Master. And I entitled this one, The First Time I Laid Eyes on Master. The first time I ever laid eyes on him, when he walked out on the platform of this tremendous big auditorium, and those beautiful, luminous eyes, filled with the Spirit of God, his hair hanging down, very Christ-like face, and Christ-like in every part of his being and appearance. And then he opened his mouth and he started to speak. And from 8 o'clock until 11, I sat absolutely spellbound, listening to this man of God from India explain to me the truth about the Christ worshipped by the Christians in the West. For the first time in my life, he really made me realize that Christ was within myself, that he was equally present everywhere, in every single human being, in every atom of space, in every bit of consciousness, that he was in truth the Son of God, the only begotten Son, but that he had come from the Father and the Mother God, and he had taken on every form in the universe. He took away the fear of sin, of hellfire and damnation, and he gave me a dream, a vision, and he told me that I could reach out for that dream and that vision if I did so, that I could find perfection within myself, that I could find the light of God within myself, I could hear his voice. I could feel him. I could become one with him. And because of the words that he spoke, he so inspired me that he changed my whole life. It's a strange thing because I met him in September of 1925. And in November of that same year, a terrible tragedy happened in my life. And if I had not met my guru before that time and been given the strength to go through this tremendous experience, I don't think I could have stood it. Either I would have lost my mind, or I would have in some way suffered terribly. But because he had come into my life, he gave me beauty. He gave me inspiration. He gave me faith. And he gave me the certain knowledge that God was within me, and that if I called upon God within him, that I could get help. And never once in my life, during his life, did he fail me. And even after that, since he has left the body, many, many times he has appeared to me. Many times I have felt his presence so greatly that it is as though he was standing before me. I felt his help. I felt his presence. I felt his guidance in every part of my life. And whatever I am in God, I owe to this man of God. But I was so glued to him, totally. I couldn't see enough of him. And yet, I only saw him 12 times in my life, only 12 times. And yet, I was never separated from him in spirit, because he took hold of my hand that first meeting, and an electrical shock went through every part of my being. I became one with him, within him, for all the years to come, and perhaps for many, many lifetimes, because I couldn't conceive of ever taking initiation from anyone else, of ever calling anyone else master. And I call him master because he was master of himself, and he was the master who came to tell me, to teach me, how I could also become a master and become one with God. He changed my whole life. He changed my whole world. And he himself said, as I have told you before, if only one soul goes all the way to God, 25 generations will follow afterwards. Just imagine what a tremendous thing that is, and what a responsibility it is for each and every one who puts their feet on the spiritual path. You too have that opportunity if you will make the effort. But someone else cannot do it for you. You have to do it yourself. Isn't that wonderful? You see, and that's just one little part of a bigger book that is being put together now. And these teachings of Mother, they just have really started. They're just really going to get their feet underneath them. When and where the fulfillment of the promise that this will go out and help change this world, in a sense that it already has. It has certainly changed my world and your world. But will it change the world on a larger scale? And I definitely think that it will. There have been examples of different saints and different realized masters who during their own lifetime were very little known. Jesus is one example of that. Brother Lawrence is another example of that. And yet, as time has gone on, the spiritual power that they exuded, that they emanated from their being, from their thoughts, their words, their actions, it grew in power with time. And other people who were very well known during their own lifetime have been back into obscurity once again, because they didn't have the fullness of that power, the fullness of that God realization. You see, we don't have to realize, we don't have to be attached to the results of what we do. We only need to know that we are expressing God in the highest light that we know each and every moment. And as we do that, we attune ourselves more and more greatly. And God will use us exactly the way that he wishes to. You think about the life of Sri Yukteswarji. And if he had had all the disciples he had but one master, he would be someone who would have lived a wonderful, wonderful God-realized life, a tremendous God-being. But the world at large would not have known about him without the agency of that one disciple. And through that one disciple, so many millions of lives have been touched by Sri Yukteswarji. So you see, we don't have to anticipate, we don't have to know what's going to happen. Will our efforts bear fruit? What we know is that God is in charge from stem to stern, and that it is His will that will take us where we will are most perfectly suited. And whether that is a life of touching just a few, or whether it goes out and reaches many more, it's all up to Him. What is it our business? We only need to know that in that moment, we are acting exactly as God would choose to act through us. We would speak His words. We would think His thoughts. His life force, His light would express itself through every particle of our being. And when we have that attunement, and when we have that knowledge and that certainty within ourselves, that is all that we need have. Reading from one other quote from Mother about meeting Master. I looked at His face and saw the face of God. That's how I entitled this one. And so when finally my Guru came into my life, I was ready for Him, believe me. I was not satisfied with what I'd been given in the Orthodox sense. I was not satisfied with the parables. Young as I was seeking, searching for truth. Now when He came, He walked onto the platform one night in the Masonic Temple downtown here, which at that time had a large balcony. And I don't know how many people it housed, but it was packed. And I got one of the last seats that were available. And when this man of God from India walked out onto the platform with his long flowing hair, his ochre-colored robe, which is similar to this color, Mother was obviously wearing her orange robe that day. I always loved that robe. Which is similar to this color. He faced the audience. I looked at his face, and there I saw the face of God. These big, beautiful, luminous eyes that looked out on me. It was a Christ-like face. And when he started to speak, everything I'd known or heard dropped away from me. And I listened spellbound for 3 hours straight without moving, I came out a totally different person than when I went in. Why? Because this master from India, who had found God within himself, put God inside of me. He made me know that He was the living presence, the living intelligence, the living power within myself, that He was equally present all around me, that was inside me here. And I'll read you one more. Let your light so shine. I think this one sentence here, let your light so shine before men that they will see your good works and glorify your Father which art in heaven. And this is true. If you are truly with God, it shines forth from your being, in your eyes, in your whole body. You will have a hidden splendor within you. And this is the light and the power of God, and it is electrical. I have seen this hidden splendor around saints. I saw it around my own guru many years ago. When he'd go on the platform, pretty soon the halo would start to form around his head and would go all over his body. And then it would spread over the platform. It would be beautiful to see. So these are just some hints of what is coming. But these writings, they are powerful. They are uplifting. They're transforming. But we have been, those of us who have followed this path, we have been initiated into the means in which to realize God within. And I can tell you as I sit here, I feel that my body is just a bare outline, almost like something drawn of an outline with a pencil on a piece of paper. And that's all that it is. But everything else is His light, His power, His grace, His love, His joy. It is all His, and it's emanating and pouring forth to this world. It is my experience, and so I can tell you this is the truth. And it's the truth not only for my own being, it is the truth for yours as well. It is a world for us to explore. This kingdom of heaven that Jesus said, there are many mansions, because there are many stages of experiences. There are many levels of consciousness that you can experience. And even as you merge yourself into God and become one with Him, those experiences continue to unfold as long as you have any sense of the I as the witness. The I of the ego has become transformed and becomes I the witness. It is a witness to what God brings about. It is a witness to what He does in you and through you and all around you. And that I goes on exploring the vast, vast kingdoms of God. We look at this world and we see, my goodness, what diversity. What incredible, remarkable power has gone into creating this. What beauty is there? And then we look out through our pictures of the Hubble telescope or other means for looking out onto this vast universe. And we see its true dimensions, at least in part. We see 10,000 galaxies as points of light. And that's just a small portion. There are billions. It's really beyond comprehension. And then we think, this creation is just the footstool of God. It is just a tiny portion. It is that little heavy basket underneath the balloon of the astral cosmos, as Sri Yukteswar so beautifully described it. And beyond that is the causal heavens. Beautiful beyond description, vast beyond description. And all of these makes this universe like one tiny little bubble, one tiny little island universe amongst many others. So you see how immense this is, how big this is, and how dare we think that we are anything great, that we are anything special, other than that we are expressions and manifestations of God Himself. But to think that this little human self is anything great, that it is to do anything other than to serve God, to love God, to realize God, is ludicrous. Ludicrous beyond thought, beyond expression. So dispense with this idea that you are either small or big, but that your truth, that your real being, and who and what you truly are, is something to be explored, something to be known. And this human expression is just simply an instrument for that greater intelligence, that greater power, that which is God, is expressing through you. But here is one of the great secrets, that as you attune yourself to that, you feel the thrill of His joy. You feel the absolute purity of His wisdom, His wisdom thoughts pouring through your own mind. And it's the most tremendous life that you could possibly imagine. This is what the great master Sri Yukteswarji wanted to convey to this world. This is what Master, this is what Mother, this is what Papa and all the great saints all the great religions. It is what their true purpose is to awaken that in you and me and all creation, all humanity. So let us honor them most by emulating them, by hearing the call and responding. As Master said, he would not stop meditating until he had somehow touched God, had some uplifted experience. He wouldn't stop. He absolutely demanded it. And this is the way that we should be. Now I realize we have time limitations, but you know what? If we really analyze our days, we'll see we've got time during the day. Perhaps there's a break time that you have, and you can just take a few minutes and you can close your eyes and go inside and touch God. Feel His presence. Feel His smile and His laughter, His joy. And it will change your day. It will change your day. It will keep you in attunement with Him. So with all my love, all my joy, everything that God is inside of me, I send out His blessings and His love that you might realize His presence now and always. Jai Gurus. Jai Gurus. Jai Gurus.